see some things.
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Good to be here. Great rain.
We're interviewing Alan Colstead today. It's I believe the 3rd of June, year 2005, at the Republican State Convention in Great Falls. Alan is currently the Republican National Committee man from Montana, but he served in both the State House Representatives and the State Senate, and as Lieutenant Governor of Montana. And I believe that you began your legislative service, Alan, in 1968?
That's correct, Bob, 1968.
What motivated you to run for the legislature?
Well, Liberty County has always been a very Democrat county. And I ran, in fact, 3 times before I was elected. Once losing by 20-some votes, and once losing on one Indian reservation. And then we were in the midst of reapportionment. But it was a real challenge in Liberty County, and I happened to be the first Republican that was successful in being elected to the legislature since our county was formed.
Wow, and that happened. So you ran unsuccessfully, what, in 60, 62, and 64, or something like that?
62, 64, 66.
So you made it on your third try.
Yes. Yeah. No, 68.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Made it on your, okay, in 68.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it was an interesting campaign, and since that time, Liberty County has been Republican. I'm not taking credit for it, but it certainly, we had so many people that worked for us hard, and we had some old traditional Democrats that had served there. In fact, they served there very well. Dave James and Walt Lass and some of those guys. And so it was a real thrill for me to win that.
They tended to be fairly conservative Democrats, and the conservative people in Liberty County are now voting more Republican than Democrat.
That is correct. Yeah. They voted Republican ever since.
Now, do you remember any issues or anything, Alan, that were important then?
Well, of course, the sales tax was an important issue. The first election, the first time I served in the State House of Representatives, and Jim Lucas, of course, spearheaded that, and consequently, I guess, was his political demise.
So the 1969 session, the sales tax was an important issue.
Yes, it was.
And Speaker Lucas, the Republican from Miles City, was the leader, I guess. Did you support the sales tax?
Well, actually, yes, I did, as a matter of fact. Jim Lucas was not the speaker in 69.
Felt was.
Yes.
And Lucas was
Jim
the majority
Felt.
Leader, I
That's
think.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I think it was the following session that that Jim Lucas
was speaker.
Was
yeah.
speaker.
Yeah.
Outstanding man.
Yeah. So, but there was a vote on the sales tax in
the
first session?
Oh, yes, there definitely was.
And that couldn't have been popular, could it, in Liberty County?
In Liberty County, it was pretty split at that time. But there were, most of the people in Liberty County are property owners. And they supported the sales tax for that reason, because they thought maybe we'd have some property tax relief.
We'd have some new revenue from the sales tax that could be used to hold the line or maybe even reduce property taxes.
That's correct.
Yeah. And then, of course, you were elected to the House again in 1970. My first session there in 71 was when we served together.
That's correct.
And then I think, didn't we go into the Senate together in 74?
We did.
Yeah.
We went in the same year.
Now, you were also actively involved during that same period, I think, Alan, in the Ronald Reagan movement.
Very much so, Bob. I was very active in the Ronald Reagan election. I remember in 1968, I was a delegate to the Miami Beach National Republican Convention. And of course, Ronald Reagan was a candidate. We had 14 delegates at that time from Montana, and 11 of them voted for Richard Nixon, and 3 of us voted for Ronald Reagan. That wasn't a popular thing, even with Governor Babcock at that time, and kind of off the record, but I'll never forget that the morning after the vote, there were 11 bottles of fancy hooch in 11 rooms. I still give Tim a bad time on that one. So.
Do you remember offhand who the other two were?
Verna Green.
From Bozeman.
From Bozeman. And the gentleman was with Union Oil. Torkelson.
Torkelson. Yes. Also from Bozeman, maybe?
No, he was from Great Falls.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay.
But we were kind of outcasts in that group.
And of course Governor Reagan. Babcock was the first Republican governor, wasn't he, in 68 to endorse Nixon? Rockefeller sort of had the governors lined up.
That's correct.
So I suppose it was important to Babcock.
It was important to Tim, and Tim was a personal friend of Richard Nixon's, and I could understand that. But we didn't have a committed delegation. We could vote any way we wanted, but it was preferable if we voted for Nixon.
Yeah, well, I understand.
But, and of course, Ronald Reagan lost that race, as you know.
But you maintained then. Was there a nationwide Reagan organization that kind of developed out of that? Or
shortly thereafter, there was. And in fact, it was a very widespread organization. They had people from all 50 states. And
did you attend any meetings?
Yes, I did. I went to some meetings in North Carolina, and I believe we went to a meeting in Phoenix, and a gentleman from Cutbank,
Frank Whetstone,
was kind of the spearheader in Montana. I served as state co-chairman for the Reagan for Presidency Cup, for president, and then also the agriculture chairman for that campaign, for those campaigns.
And of course, Reagan was a serious contender in 1976.
Very much so.
And there was quite a convention in Montana that year.
We had a locked-in delegation that year. We still had the 14 delegates. Now we have 20. But we were committed to vote for Ronald Reagan at that time.
And so that convention in 1976 sent a pledged delegation for Ronald
Reagan. They were pledged and sworn in.
And you attended that convention, and of course it was close. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the details of the convention?
Well, I remember some of the people that were involved, and it was...
He's not registered here, not checked in. She doesn't know anything about the front desk.
Keep looking for him, can you, Jess? Okay. Excuse me.
They had a very well-organized group at that convention. And they had their headquarters outside, as I recall, in a trailer outside the convention headquarters.
The Reagan people.
The Reagan people did. And of course, they just didn't miss any bets. I mean, they were in every state delegation speaking, they really barnstormed that place and made it work.
And yet the Ford, of course, was the incumbent, sort of. Nixon had resigned.
Right.
In a humiliating kind of a circumstance. And
right.
His vice president had to resign before him.
That's correct.
And Representative Gerald Ford, the Republican minority leader from Michigan, had been nominated by President Nixon to replace Spiro Agnew as the vice president.
That's correct.
And I think that happened according to the Constitution. Ford was confirmed. So he had only been vice president for a short amount of time, and by appointment.
Yes.
So he was a kind of a tenuous incumbent, but he was more or less a unifying figure in the Republican Party.
He definitely was.
And there was a real battle, and Reagan narrowly lost it. And I remember something, too, about Reagan had announced early on Governor Dick Schweiker of Pennsylvania would be his running mate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some suspicion on the part of the Reagan people that President Ford may have hinted to a number of people that they would be his running mate. And so I think the Reagan strategy had something to do with making a motion on the convention floor to require that both candidates announce before the balloting for president who their vice president would be.
That's exactly what happened.
And the Ford people defeated that motion,
mm-hmm,
by just a few votes, and I think the Reagan people felt that at that point the handwriting was on the wall.
That is right.
And
that was a turning point, actually.
Yeah. And then Gerald Ford went on to choose Bob Dole, the senator from Kansas, as his running mate, and they lost to Jimmy Carter, and then, of course, we heard from Bob Dole again afterwards.
That's true.
Exciting involvement.
Oh, it was very exciting times.
And because you went on, and you were a delegate again in 1980 when Reagan was nominated?
No, I wasn't a delegate that year. We had some personal business, it wouldn't allow us to do that. But that was the exciting convention.
Alan, did you ever meet Ronald Reagan?
Oh, very, very many times. Several times.
Describe him. Tell about him.
Well, he was Ronald Reagan was a very personal man. He just had a personality that wouldn't quit. And he came out here once to Helena, and I remember he cut me some tapes. I was running for the state senate at that time, and he cut me for some tapes for the radio. I wish I'd have kept those tapes. It didn't do it. But anyway, and then when I ran for the U.S. Senate, I went back to California and met him in his office, and he also cut me some tapes there. At that time, his health was just starting to fail, but he had a beautiful office there in up in the 20th story of one of those buildings in Los Angeles. But he was a very personal individual, and I remember when he came to Cut Bank and got stormed in there. They couldn't fly him out of there, and they had to wait for several hours at the little Cut Bank airport. Ronald Reagan left his mark on the United States, and he definitely left his mark on our state.
But you would describe him personally as warm, kind?
Very, very much so, and very down to earth. I had another occasion, he was speaking at a bankers' convention in Big Sky, and I was asked to go down to Belgrade and pick him up and take him up to the airport. And he was just a real common, down-to-earth gentleman, and he was a gentleman and an excellent president.
Yeah, he'll go down in history, I think.
He definitely will.
One of our more notable
presidents. And he will.
You served in the legislature a total of how many years? From 68?
20.
20 years.
20 years. I had to resign in November become lieutenant governor, but it was just from November to January, less 20 years.
Okay, from 68 to 88.
Yes.
Because you elected lieutenant
yes.
governor in 88.
Yes.
Now, Alan, that's a long time, and I remember you served in leadership for a major portion of that time. In fact, I think you were the president pro tem of the state senate three consecutive terms, and I'm not sure anybody else has ever done that. At least in my memory, they never have.
Well, I was very pleased to serve as senate president pro tem under three excellent presidents, Bill Mather, Gene Turnage, Stan Stevens. And of course, I knew two other, I worked closely with two of the other presidents, and that was Jack Galt and yourself. And I was always very proud of the people that served as president of the Senate during those years.
Alan, were there legislators in your experience in the House? Let's first begin there. Were there legislators you can remember from the House of Representatives who particularly stand out?
Yes, there are. Jim Lucas, of course, stands out in my mind probably first and foremost. He was just an excellent leader and a great speaker, public speaker, and he organized the House in just the greatest fashion. I also served with Joe Mazurek, who I've always thought very highly of. He's on the other party, but he was a great, great leader in both the Senate and House. And, well, there were several others, too. Bob Ellard was more of a quiet person, but...
Representative Bob Ellard from Bozeman.
Right, Representative Bob Ellard from Bozeman. But he still made his mark in the State House of Representatives, did an excellent job. And of course, I'll never forget Representative Gary Gysyk. It seemed like if there was any Democrat plan that was ridiculous, he was able to shoot it down better than anyone I know.
Gary Gysyk from Billings.
From Billings.
And he was kind of a heavy set man, as I remember.
Yes, a little bit so, yes.
In fact, I remember once Representative Sonny Loughran from Billings.
Yes.
We both served with Sonny, too.
Right.
And he described Gary as weighing just a little more than an eighth of a ton.
An eighth of a ton. Well, that's correct. I had the privilege of attending his funeral, and I've never seen a casket that large. It was double.
Really?
And Jack Reberg told me that it took two cemetery lots. I know he was, I don't know, you're not going to have to make this all public, but anyway, they called me to be a pallbearer, and I told my wife, I said, I hope they cremate him because six people couldn't haul him. But they had 15 pallbearers, and 12 of them packed the casket.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But he'll always go down in my memory as a great person. I liked him a lot.
Had a great sunshine personality.
Oh, you bet. He was happy about everything. And he had such a lovely wife. Linda was just a very special person. And they were happily married until his death. So,
Alan, someone else we served with, you and I both did in the House as well as in the Senate, and the other political party, but mm-hmm. someone who made some considerable waves while we were there, was Representative and later Senator Tom Tow.
Yes, yes. Tom Tow. I guess you and I both served with Tom most of the time he was there. And he made his mark in the legislature, that's for sure. And he always extended the legislature about 4 days with his oratory.
He had lots of comments on lots of bills.
He did, and they were lengthy comments.
Harold Gerke.
Harold Gerke, you bet. He was also a leader in the House. During the time I served, and
a Democrat from Billings,
and I always had a lot of respect for Harold. I think he was an honorable man.
Then in the Senate, of course, you were there most of the time that you served in the legislature.
Yes.
And,
yes.
Are there any members of the Senate that stand out?
Oh, definitely. There are all of the Senate presidents that I mentioned earlier have to stand out in my mind. And I mentioned Joe Masaryk earlier, and I had a lot of respect for Joe, still do.
Joe was a Democrat who had an ability to reach out to Republicans.
He really did. He had a lot of charisma, and he was liked by both parties. And then Larry Fassbender, another great politician as far as I'm concerned, and a Democrat from Great Falls. I'll mention that from now on, what they were. And of course, Big Ed Smith from Dagmar, Republican from Dagmar.
What was there about Larry Fassbender that kind of sticks in your mind?
Well, I thought Larry Fassbender was very convincing, and people had some they believed what he told them, and he could he was a great debater, and he came from a farm out here at Fort Shaw, and he. I just liked his mannerisms, and I thought he did an excellent job. In fact, I was surprised, I guess, that he never did run for higher office.
Well, he was defeated for re-election to the state senate.
Yeah, he was.
A bizarre upset. There was a fellow named Gary Lee who.
He was my seatmate, Gary Lee from Great Falls, another great guy. I liked him a lot. He added a lot to the state senate, and then there was.
You mentioned Ed Smith.
I mentioned Big Ed Smith. And of course, he was
up at Dagmar, Republican.
Dagmar, Montana, and Ed was Ed got a lot of things done too, and of course, he was he was one of the real leaders in the sales tax movement. He was opposed to it, and of course, his country where he's at from eastern Montana, northeastern Montana. Thought very highly of him because of that, and not only because of that, but he ran a real close race for governor also. He got 47% of the vote, I think.
That was in 1976.
That was in 1976.
But when you and I and Ed served in the House together in 1971, as I recall, we had a narrow Republican majority, and Speaker Lucas was trying to get a sales tax proposal mm-hmm. of some kind out of the House mm-hmm. of Representatives. And Ed was one of three Republicans. Mm-hmm. The other two were Lou Perry from Malta and Gary Marbit
right.
from Missoula, who managed to, by the three of them voting with a united Democratic Party,
right.
managed to keep that that proposal bottled up for a long time in the House of Representatives.
That's true.
And because new taxes are generally unpopular anyplace, and you know that we can argue, I guess, ad infinitum about whether they were confused or understood the real facts about the
right.
sales tax, but Ed actually. Benefited himself politically. I think that there was a common feeling that because Jim Lucas was a brilliant and beautiful orator mm-hmm. and a wonderful leader, that he almost certainly would be the Republican candidate for governor. Mm-hmm. But I think largely due to the sales tax, Ed Smith, the maverick, who voted against it, got the Republican nomination, and Jim didn't even contest it with him.
That's true.
And then went on and nearly won the general election.
He did, for sure. He ran a very, very fine race, and he was underfunded like most Republican candidates are.
Yeah.
And, no, I haven't seen Ed for quite a while, but I call him on the phone, and he calls me occasionally, and we get together on the phone. Another good Democrat leader was Terry Murphy, and I understand he has since switched parties, and I always became a Republican, and I never really could understand why Terry was a Democrat, and he was a leader in their party, as a matter of fact, and mainly because he was president of the Farmers Union, the State Farmers Union, and that was the only way he could go at that time. So, but there were several people in the legislature that really stood out. Bill Norman, another one. J.D. Lynch, everybody.
Senator Bill Norman from Missoula.
From Missoula, and J.D. Lynch from Butte. And
What do you remember, what do you find most memorable about J.D. Lynch?
Well, J.D. Lynch is a good personal friend of mine, and we worked together on a lot of different issues, and I thought what I really appreciated about J.D. Lynch, when the Republicans were really in a bind, especially on a vote that would affect industry, he would always get on board, always. And of course, his oratory in his Irish manner was always, you could always distinguish it from anywhere in the Capitol. And
he'd do his Nixon and Churchill impersonations.
He did the impersonations, and and he had a pretty good following there, and he served a long time, way over 20 years.
Now, Bill Norman, you mentioned him, Alan, also
yes.
switched parties.
Yes,
also
he did.
Also became a Republican, too.
Bill Norman switched party. It was a real surprise to me to see him at a Republican convention here a few years ago, and Bill is... Bill was a great Senate president. He did a good job, and I don't know, things were different at that time. I mean, you didn't have the hate that you have now between the parties.
I think term limitations have made it impossible for members of the legislature to come to know each other.
I agree.
And I think that's probably been a factor.
And the leadership hasn't had the experience that they used to have. And several things have changed, but term limits has a lot of negatives, in my opinion.
Alan, I can remember when you and I served in the Senate in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't considered bad to see a couple of prominent Republican senators having lunch with a couple of prominent Democrat senators.
That is correct.
Most of the rest of us thought, well, some progress will probably result from that meeting. And
right.
I think generally it did.
I think it did.
Now, that's a real no-no.
You never see that anymore.
Yeah.
You used to go down to Jorgensen's or wherever for lunch, and they would be all eating together and breaking bread together. That does not happen anymore.
Jorgensen's, of course, is a restaurant near the Capitol
yes,
building in Helena.
That's correct, and kind of a meeting place for the legislature, especially at lunch.
Lobbyists.
Well,
any of those stand out in your mind?
Several lobbyists stand out in my mind. When I was when I first went to the legislature, you know, I was a little bit taken back by the lobbyists, but I met so many good ones and so many honorable ones, and without the lobbyists, a legislature really can't function, because we have, you know, 1,000 or so bills, and you can't be knowledgeable about every bill. And I remember Crippen, for example,
Lloyd
Crippen from Butte.
Anaconda Company.
And I had a lot of respect for him. Ev Shuey from...
How was Crippen effective? I mean, what did
he do? Well, Crippen was more effective outside the Capitol than he was inside the Capitol, I thought. And he had a great personality, and his wife Lois didn't hurt that any, because she was always real bubbly too, and they'd have a group of legislators out to their home, and if you ever had a question that you or something that you really didn't understand in legislative work, Crippen could always come up with an answer that was satisfactory and
put you in touch with someone or help you.
He would always do it in that way. Yeah. You know, if he didn't know the answer, he would recommend someone that did, and they were always honorable people that you could trust. Ev Shuey from Butte, also another
Montana Power Company.
From Montana Power Company, was a very good lobbyist, and he did it in more of a quiet way, I guess, than Crippen, but he was still extremely effective, and people from both parties revered his knowledge on legislative business, and I always appreciated him very much. And there were other lobbyists too. In fact, I guess I really never met a lobbyist that, or I shouldn't say, that I didn't trust. I mean, most of them, at that time anyway, were, they knew if they ever lied to you once, that would be it. And so most of them appreciated their jobs, and they were pretty straight.
Alan, was Boo McGilvray still there when you got there? Do you remember him at all?
Yes, I do remember him. Yes, he was more forceful, and he twisted some arms pretty good. But
now he represented the Montana Power Company.
Yeah,
I don't remember him as a lobbyist, but I had an interesting visit with him after he had more or less retired from being a lobbyist for Montana Power Company, and he was appointed, I think, to the State Historical Society Board of Directors.
Right.
And he was in Helena for a meeting of the Historical Society Board, and another lobbyist, Bill Kirkpatrick,
mm-hmm.
who you may remember,
mm-hmm. I do.
Had a visit with me, and he said, Bobby, he said, I know you love history, and he said, I want you to meet Boo McGilvray, and we had a real interesting conversation.
Oh, yeah. He was knowledgeable, very knowledgeable, and especially about history and other things that you would be interested in.
Colorful character.
Oh, he was. For sure. Oh, yeah. So, and of course, John Lahr, everybody remembers John Lahr.
Montana Power Company usually lobbied the Democrats.
Usually lobbied the Democrats. In fact, they had a perpetual meal ticket with John Lahr. Oh, he married one of my neighbor's daughters, of course, Congressman Leroy Anderson's daughter. And so then he farmed not too far from me out near Ledger, and he farmed on Leroy's farm.
I see.
He raised registered bulls, and we used to buy bulls from John Lahr. He used to say he can never forget when I'd come over there to buy bulls, my antennas would be flying, and he said, and I would be driving in and the dust would fly, and he says I'd buy a few bulls and go home. And oh, he's something else. Yep.
What do you remember about Leroy Anderson?
Well,
congressman.
Yeah, right. Congressman from Conrad. Of course, I never appreciated Leroy Anderson's politics. I mean, his politics and our politics were totally a reverse. He started a barley malt plant out there at Conrad, and of course, I guess I was one of the first suckers he got to invest in it. Wrote him a check for $7,500, and of course, that was the end of things. I think it went into his campaign, which is even more disturbing. So, but that was a failure. But as a businessman, Leroy Anderson was a disaster. And I think he followed through on that with his congressional serving as well. But
do you remember Jim Batten?
Oh, yes, I remember Jim Batten, big Jim Batten. Great, colorful leader in our state for many, many, many years. And of course, he was in Congress during my early years in politics. I knew Jim personally, but I didn't have any personal dealings with Jim Batten, but I always had a lot of respect for his ability and the way he carried himself.
Now, of course, Senator Mike Mansfield was a legend in Montana history
right,
for a long time.
Right, and a very good one.
Most of us met him, knew him a little
bit.
Do you have
did.
Any thoughts, recollections? Anything?
Well, I do. He was kind of a soft-spoken Senate Majority Leader, and I understand he served longer than anyone else.
As Majority Leader.
As Majority Leader in the United States Senate. I always questioned the real good that he did for Montana in his position. But I had a lot of respect for Mike Mansfield. I happened to be chairman of the Centennial as Lieutenant Governor, and of course we invited Mike Mansfield to be one of our main speakers.
Even though he was no longer in the U.S.
Even Senate. Though he was no longer in the U.S. Senate, he was...
this would have been, what, in 1989?
Yes, yeah. When he was involved in Japan
as
ambassador. And I was taken back a little because Mike Mansfield, whom I thought a lot of, spoke at our centennial. He never mentioned Montana once. It was all Japan. And this is our centennial. And I thought that was pretty poor taste, you know. And I heard a lot of comment about that. But he served Montana well, and he deserves his place in history.
Senator Lee Metcalf, any recollections of him?
Not a lot. Not a lot. I met him several times, and I believe that he got there the first time by beating Rankin.
Wellington D. Rankin.
Wellington D. Rankin by 800 votes.
That was for the U.S. House of Representatives.
That was for the House
of
That was in 1952. And of course, if I remember correctly, he beat him by 800 votes.
Yeah, real close.
And from then on, he was there.
Now, Alan, I think I remember a conversation you and I had some years ago in which I asked you if you had ever met Wellington D. Rankin.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me something to the effect that he had come up to Chester
mm-hmm.
to buy cattle from your dad.
Horses
from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that Rankin and your dad were in the back seat of the car and
mm-hmm.
you were driving and you were like 16 years old or 14 years
old. Oh, I wasn't real old. That's true. I wasn't very old.
Anyway.
I was probably a teenager.
You described a little bit your recollections of your dad having the conversation with this legendary Montana politician and
right.
lawyer Wellington D. Rankin.
Well, my dad and Wellington D. Rankin were very close friends. In fact, my dad sold his ranch, his Hinsdale Valley County ranch, to Wellington D. Wellington D. didn't even come and look at it. It was a 100,000-acre ranch. He flew over it and bought it. But what I remember about him, I used to go with my dad and visit him in his office in Helena, upstairs right across from the Placer Hotel. And it was the junkiest office that you'll ever see.
You got there in some kind of an old rattletrap elevator, a guy was telling
me? Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a rattletrap elevator with an old saddle in it and a part of some harness for some horses. But anyway, the Sunday afternoon that he came up to our place to buy horses was the day Ruby shot Oswald. That was the very day. And I had the radio on. And that was the first we'd heard of it. And as soon as they announced that fact, Wellington D. said, what a wonderful case that would have made for some attorney.
That's what he saw.
That's
in
what
that.
He said. That's what he saw in it.
And of course, he was a legendary trial attorney.
And an excellent one. Yeah. An excellent one. And he really made his mark in Montana, and he was national committee man for our party, and that's probably as far as he got.
Republican National Committee Man. I think he served at one time as Attorney General.
Yes, he was Attorney General once.
And he was on the Supreme Court, I think, also
yes.
briefly. But he ran unsuccessfully in close elections for the U.S. Senate, maybe a couple
yes,
of different times.
He did.
For the U.S. House once, critically close election.
Magnificent man. Magnificent man.
He was a big, impressive sort of a guy?
Yes, he was. He was, sure. And
have a sense of humor? Do you remember
he that? He had a dry sense of humor, but he did have a sense of humor. Yes, he did. He and my dad were real buddies, as I said earlier, and my dad really thought highly of him. A lot of the ranchers in Montana that he neighbored didn't have that kind of an impression of him because, he ran pretty roughshod over every operation, and of course, most of his employees, or a lot of them, came out of Deer Lodge when they were paroled or
they
out
were,
of there.
They were reaching the parolees for parolees from the prison system.
Yes.
He'd give them jobs when they came out.
That's correct. He had to promise the warden that they were, that they had employment, and then they would release them, and he would meet them on the at the bus station,
huh.
Or have one of his men meet them. And of course, Jack Gault, of course, was one of his foremen. Senator Jack Gault from Martinsdale was one of his foremen, and then of course he ended up marrying Louise, who was Rankin's widow, and they still live on the ranch, 71 Ranch in Martinsdale.
And of course, Jack is someone I'm going to interview.
Yes, and
as a part of this same
that
project.
Will be great.
I'll also interview Jim Lucas, who we've talked about, and
wonderful.
Ed Smith, who we've talked about.
Wonderful.
And Bill Mathers. Who
and Bill Mathers. You bet, and probably Gene Turnage.
Yes, I've talked to Gene about it, but we've had
uh-huh.
difficulty scheduling a time.
I see.
That's going to happen too.
I see, great.
Now, so. Alan, in 1988, State Senator Alan Colstead from Chester teamed up with State Senator Stan Stevens from Havre, and with Stan running for governor and you running for lieutenant governor, you made the great race, and you were successful. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what led up to that, maybe a little bit about the primary election, and maybe a little about the general election.
I will. Stan and I, of course, were longtime personal friends. Many people said that you couldn't have two candidates from the same area, practically the same district. Each of us had half of Havre in our Senate districts. He had one half, and I had the other half. And we rented a home together in Helena for 16 years of our service in the government.
Eight legislative sessions,
right. We did, and we always rented a home together. In fact, interesting enough, we rented two very popular Democrats' homes. Louise Kingsbury, we stayed in her home once, and she was, for a couple, three sessions, and she was the national committee woman for the Democrat Party for many, many years. And Louise, as she belongs, she had made her mark in Montana history too, and in a different way, I guess, but she was a very colorful individual. She's since passed on, but I remember Stan and I got to be quite close friends with Louise Kingsbury, and of course, we took care of her home very well. And I'll have to tell you this one story, and I've told it to you before, but I went there to move into her home the Sunday afternoon before the legislature started. And I rang the doorbell, and I could hear a loud, low, booming voice say, "Come in." So I walked in, and no sign of anyone. No noise, no nothing. So finally, after a few minutes, I wondered where she was. So I said, "I'm here. Is there anyone home?" "Yeah," she said, "I'm back in my bedroom packing my bags." She was going on a worldwide cruise with her sister. And I said, "You want me to come back and help you load your bags?" "Yeah, hell, you might as well." So I came back there, and much to my surprise, there she stood with her bra and her panties and that was it. And she'd had plenty to drink. I helped her load her bags, and she showed me the way around the house and different things and how the different electrical deals worked. And we were upstairs and looked at the one of the chandeliers, and she says, "This chandelier is one of my real prized possessions." She says, "I got it in Italy." And we went on and saw the different paintings she had on the wall, and everything went well, and she took off for her worldwide cruise with her sister. And Stan came in that night.
Stan Stevens,
my roommate there, I guess you would call him. And so anyway, the second day of the legislature, we came home, and
you and Stan
and I came back to the Kingsbury residence. The chandelier was splattered all over the table and on the floor. It had fallen down. Oh, and I said, Stan, what'll we do? I said, this is her most important possession. He says, we'll just torch the place. I said, well, gotta get, he doesn't like this story. But anyway, I said, well, we better get some of our stuff out before we do it. But anyway, I called a lighting company in Helena, and it just so happened to be the lighting company that hung the chandelier. And they hadn't put in the proper number of screws. There wasn't one crystal broken on the chandelier.
Oh.
And he rehung the chandelier. And years later, Louise was lying in her deathbed.
Is that Louise Kingsbury or Bernice Kingsbury?
Bernice. And Stan and I went up to visit her in her home. She was on her deathbed in her room in the home we rented. And I told her that story. And I think it was probably the first time she laughed for a long time. But that was interesting. But anyway, we became very close friends of Bernice. And one time we were up there, and she said, oh, you're all dressed up. Where are you going? I said, we're going over to the mansion. Tom Judge is having a big deal over there.
Governor Tom Judge
at the governor's mansion. And well, she said, strange I wasn't invited, you know, because she was a very close friend. Well, he totally forgot to call her. So we called him, not from there, but from someplace else, and we told him, oh, he said, my goodness, he said, I've got to handle this. He said, would you mind? He says, I'll call her immediately. And he said, if you two will escort her to the mansion, he said, I'd really appreciate it. And we did. And we waltzed in there with Bernice Kingsbury, and you should have seen the look on the faces of the people. But anyway, it was interesting. And then another home that Stan and I rented for many, many sessions was Joe Reber's. And Joe Reber, of course, was the National Committee man for the Democrat Party for years and years. Joe Reber from Helena.
And Butte.
And Butte, local plumber, and had a very nice home up on Flowery. And so we had some really good times there. So
I remember, Alan, that you and Stan used to invite groups of legislators over for dinner.
We did.
Every week or so, and I can remember having some wonderful dinner
parties. We had an excellent lady that cleaned our home that would come in and cook dinners, and she was just a super gal. So, and I remember very plainly one night when we had a dinner there, and Max Baucus and John Murphy crashed our party. And of course, we had to kick them out because they weren't welcome. But
now, Max Baucus, of course, went on to be a U.S. representative.
Yes,
U.S. senator.
Certainly did.
John Murphy and Max were both young state representatives.
They were
at the time.
Yeah. Yes, Max only served one term, as you know, in the State House of Representatives, and then went on to Washington. And John Murphy was in Great Falls for many years, and I don't know where he is now. But
well, we remember his nickname was Mudslide Murphy.
Mudslide Murphy, and also Landslide Murphy. He'd put both signs up on his desk, and somebody, got him a toy phone so that he could act the part.
And he had, as I remember too, he was elected in might have been 72 or 74 to the House.
Mm-hmm.
It was following a reapportionment of the legislative district lines, and somehow or other he was in some kind of a multi-district situation, and it ended up, even after the recount, as a tie vote.
That's correct. He and I were in the same in the same district, and he and Bud Aspavig from Rudyard tied, and of course Forrest Anderson chose
Forrest Anderson. When the Constitution read then, and I think still reads, that in the case of a tie, If it's an irreconcilable tie, then the governor can make the appointment, and so Governor Anderson appointed the Democrat.
Right, and he wasn't compelled to nominate or select either one.
Yeah.
I mean, or he could select either.
There's some irony there too, because I served with Bud, and I know you did too, as a Democrat in the legislature. Bud Aspavig was a conservative Democrat.
Right.
Switched parties and ran as a Republican.
Right.
And lost out in that tie situation.
That's true.
I think he later was killed in a plane crash.
He was. Right? He was killed in a spraying accident up by Rudyard.
He was a crop duster.
Yes, he was.
So you and Stan enjoyed this long relationship together, and you decided to run for governor and lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there were people who thought that was a little bit unusual, because generally what you try to do is find someone from the western part of the state and someone from the eastern part of the state.
And from more of a populous area, as a rule.
Yeah. So you were both from rural parts, from a rural part of Montana,
right.
Basically the same rural part of Montana.
Same part, you bet. He's from Havre, I'm from Chester. But we ran a real tough campaign. I guess all state campaigns are tough, as you can probably attest to. But this one was really tough. And we were running against former Governor Tom Judge.
But Alan, before then, you had a tough primary.
Yes, we had an extremely tough primary. And we survived that. And
Jim Waltermeyer and Cal Winslow.
They were the two.
Waltermeyer was the Secretary of State, killed shortly before the primary election plane crash, and Winslow was a young state representative from Billings.
That's correct. And that was a very difficult and hard-fought and not too pleasant of a primary, as a matter of fact, as most primaries aren't, and you found that out.
Yeah.
So, I was in Shoto the night Jim Waltermeyer was killed, to their shrimp peel they have there, the Republicans, every year. And Jim's wife spoke in Shoto that night on his behalf, gave a great speech, because I understand he was in Glasgow, if I remember correctly. And on my way back to Helena, of course, I heard this news on the radio, which wasn't a nice thing at all. But it was a difficult primary, and we had to mend a lot of fences after you do. I mean, in all primaries.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get it done, sometimes you don't. But we had an interesting campaign for the general election against former Governor Tom Judge. And Tom has always been my friend, and he still is. We've been invited to dinner parties at his home in Arizona, and we associate with each other back and forth somewhat. But it was a difficult general election. In fact, shortly prior to the general election, they came out with a poll. I mean, this was just two or three weeks before, maybe as many as 4 weeks. But Tom Judge was ahead of us by 15 points, as I recall. Well, what that does to a campaign, first of all, it dries up your funds. No one is going to donate any more dollars. They're not going to waste any more bucks on the loser. So we just, from that day forward, we really went to work without any additional funds. And in fact, we put in a lot of 18-hour days, and they were difficult. But the outcome was successful for us, and I guess probably we were as surprised as anyone. But it worked.
And won a narrow victory in 1988.
Yes, it was a fairly narrow victory.
Now, Alan, the Democrats had held the governorship for 20 years preceding that election.
That's correct.
And there had only been one Republican U.S. senator elected for one term by a popular vote.
In the history of our state.
In the entire history of our state until the 1988 election.
Mm-hmm.
And then the young fella broke the Democrat hold on the office of Attorney General. He had Attorneys General.
That's right.
For most of modern history. And his name was Mark Roscoe.
That's correct.
So Stan Stevens and Alan Colstead, Conrad Burns elected to U.S.
Right.
Senate, and Mark Roscoe elected Attorney General.
It was a banner year for Montana Republicans.
It was a real breakthrough, wasn't it?
It was a real breakthrough. And I think it showed through for many years.
Well, Burns really, is still in the U.S.
And Burns
Senate.
Is still there, and Roscoe
went on to be governor and Republican National
right,
Chairman.
Right, and he retired with the crown, and he did it all. So, no, it was a significant year for Republicans. It really was.
When you look back over your life, any thoughts, any overall impressions or anything of your life in politics and public service?
Well, I guess probably the greatest memories I will always have as far as serving in politics are concerned are the wonderful people that you meet from both parties. Really, you establish some lifelong friends from each of the 56 counties in our state, and that's what I probably enjoyed the most about politics. I didn't enjoy some of the press that we got as governor and lieutenant governor, because it wasn't really fair and it wasn't good. I'll never forget when we were trying to buy a governor's airplane. And we did some shopping around. At that time, in fact, they still do confiscate airplanes on the Canadian border for dope and certain things. And
airplanes used in criminal activities.
In criminal activities.
The government can confiscate them.
And the government can buy them. Mm-hmm. And we could have bought a real nice Queen Air airplane for about 10 cents on the dollar. Well,
The state of Montana could have
bought that airplane. Well, the headlines in the Great Falls Tribune the next morning read, "Governor negotiates with drug dealers for airplane." I took that headline into Stan, and he just about had a cardiac on the spot. Anyway, we abandoned that idea, and we got an airplane that probably cost $800,000 more for the taxpayer to spend. But these are some of the things that the press do to help Montana. And I'll never forget that. And but they still have the same airplane that we purchased at that time for the governor's airplane.
Now, you went on, then after you served as lieutenant governor, you remained active in Republican Party politics, mm-hmm. and I think 2 years ago, you were elected Republican Party National Committee man.
I was.
1 year ago. 2 years ago.
Well, this is just the second year.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And so that means you serve on the Republican National Committee.
I do.
And you've probably been to, what, two or three meetings?
Yes, two, as a matter of fact. And we're having another meeting in early August in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I suppose you've probably heard the president speak.
Yes, we have two or three times. I had a nice chance to visit with him at our last meeting. And
any impressions of President George W. Bush?
Oh, I just think he's a fine man, and he's just a very honorable, honest type individual that can speak and talk to anyone. He's very down to earth. During our last meeting, national committee meeting, each of the states. 50 delegations, which consist of a national committee man, national committee woman, and state chairman. Each of those 50 states had their picture taken with George and Laura. We haven't received that picture yet, but I'm still looking forward to getting it. And I tell everyone that I think Laura had her arms around me, but I'm not sure. But I'll be able to prove it when I get the picture. But no, George Bush is a real bit of fresh air in Washington following his father, and his father was an excellent president as well, whom I even knew better than his son.
But you had met and known President George
yes,
Bush, H.W.
I did.
Bush.
I did. When I was chairman of the Montana Centennial during my days as lieutenant governor, we invited him to come out, and he did. And he also came out on my behalf in Billings when I was running for the U.S. Senate, and gave a really great talk. At that time, I had the opportunity of flying down to Boise and flying from Boise to Billings in Air Force One with President Bush. And that stands out as one of my real special memories.
What's the interior of Air Force One like?
They have a couple of three Air Force Ones, I guess, but this one, the it's much different than a regular commercial airplane, in that the front part is separated off from the back part where the press sits, and they have, you know, a couple dozen press people back there, and then the president has a special room of his own, a suite, and it's towards the front of the airplane, towards the right, and it's just a real nice suite, and he invited me in there to
stuffed chairs, tables.
Yes, and he invited me in there to visit with him during that trip, and then we had an excellent steak dinner on the airplane on the way.
Were the press rights, is that more like just conventional airlines?
Yeah, seating? It's pretty much just coach seats, mm-hmm. Right? The other seats are quite plush. And I got some memorabilia from there, some nice napkins and decks of cards and a few things that they gave me. And I remember we were sitting in his private quarters as we flew over Laurel. And he said, "Is this Billings?" And I said, "No, this is Laurel." I said, "It's just 20-some miles out of Billings." And he looked at his watch, and he said, "Well, we're about 15 minutes early." And he said, "This plane can't touch down until 3:30. And the wheels have to touch the runway at 3:30. They have to be very precise about that." So we flew around. I don't know if we went into North Dakota or what, but we came back and we touched down right at 3:30, and then of course his entourage was in the other airplane, and that's where the limousines were, and they wheeled those babies out, and we rode downtown in Billings. Which was a memorable thing for me. I'll never forget it. I remember asking President Bush on our way down to the hotel, I said, "How thick are these bulletproof windows?" Well, he says, "Roll one down and check it out. They're about an inch and a half thick. You can't believe it. And you can't tell that by looking out." And Stan Stevens and Ann, Governor Stan Stevens and First Lady Ann were with us in the car, and my wife had just driven in from Great Falls, and she joined us, and I'll never forget what she said. She said, "Mr. President," she says, "I can't believe it." She said, four hours ago, I was buying dog food for our hired men in Great Falls, and now I'm riding with the President of the United States."
That's what Iva told him?
Yeah. She doesn't like that story either.
Well, now we want to be careful here. She wasn't buying dog food to feed the hired men.
No. I'm not going to make this clear. Actually, we have a very good relationship with our hired men. We have two men on our ranch that have been there a total of 76 years. They're brothers, and neither one of them have ever been married, and they've been with us that long, so they are definitely part of our family. And
Iva was buying dog food for their dogs.
She was buying dog food for our cattle man's dog, and the president got quite a kick out of that, but I don't think Stan Stevens did, and I know Iva doesn't like to hear the story either, so, but it worked okay for the president.
Anything else? Any concluding thoughts?
Well, one other politician that I knew quite well, Arnold Olson.
Oh, yeah.
Arnold Olson, he was our legal counsel for an organization I belonged to. In fact, it was a mining company out of Helena, and we had some interest in that, my dad and I.
This was in the 50s before he was a congressman?
This was just when he was getting ready to run for Congress.
Okay.
The reason I remember that is because he said, "You know, I'm looking at a new car," and he says, "I'd really like to get a Cadillac," but he said, "Of course, you can't have one when you're running for Congress."
Yeah.
So, but Arnold was a good person. I liked him a lot. He did a lot of good things for us as our legal counsel, and I'll never forget, though, the time he was running against Jay Hugo.
He ran for, Arnold Olson was Attorney General, mm-hmm. and he, while Attorney General, ran for governor against Hugo Aronson in 1956.
Right. And I remember a speech that Hugo made in Shelby, Montana, and he says, I remember Arnold Olson is a promising young attorney, and he says the SOB is still promising. I'll never forget that statement. You couldn't get by with that now, but at that time it worked.
Well, I remember I had a good experience with Arnold Olson, too. Well, he was a congressman. I was a college student, and mm-hmm. I was back in Washington, D.C., and he was very kind to me mm-hmm. when I was back there.
And he would be. He was a kind person. I liked Ronald a lot. He didn't agree with his politics, but we were still good friends.
Did you continue to know him then when he returned to Montana after
yes.
his defeat?
Yes, I did. I did, to a degree. Yes, I did. He was...
District judge in Butte for a while.
Yes, very personable guy. And he had a lovely wife, really nice gal. So that's kind of the synopsis of where I have been in politics. I really enjoyed politics. It's been good to me. It's been a kind of something else to do besides run a large dry operation wheat farm. And we made so many friends, as you know. You make such great long-standing friends in politics, and it's a friendship that lasts for a lifetime, and I appreciate that from both parties.
You're still here.
We're still
both you and I are
still walking around. Barely, but we're walking.
Well, I'm sure proud to call you a friend, Alan.
Oh, I am proud to call you a friend too, Bob.